It's time for our weekly chat with National Party MP Christopher Luxon.
Earlier today, I caught up with MP Christopher Luxon as part of our weekly chat. As National's spokesperson for local government, we've spoken a lot in recent weeks about the government's proposed Three Waters reform. I wanted to speak to him this week a bit more generally about the role of local government compared to central government and how they can work together to help local people. We also discussed Labour's electric vehicle policy from a few weeks ago, which would give a discount to many electric vehicles, but increase taxes on some vehicles deemed to have particularly high emissions, such as utes. Luxon seems to be a big fan of utes, which would get taxed under this policy, and we discussed how he would prefer to go about incentivising electric sustainable vehicles. I started, however, by asking Luxon whether he thought local government needs more power.
In my mind, you know, the bottom line is we need clear differentiation between local and central government. We need local government to deliver the basic services incredibly well and offer really good levels of customer service. We possibly need to start to think about local government funding and what that could, you know, look like between central and local government. Do they actually get to participate and get incentivized to actually to develop, to do more development through participating and collecting some other forms of revenue? And we've got to work very hard on improving governance so that we can, you know, raise the trust level with the people that they're purported to represent. And obviously now with the Three Waters, you know, talking about being centralised, obviously RMA reforms going to regional councils. There's a whole bunch of issues where you get a chance to say, well, what should it be about? And I think that's going to be the interesting conversation for the next wee while, next few years.
I spoke with you a little while ago about Auckland as a super city and how that's gone. Do you think that's something which could possibly be used in some other areas of New Zealand? How do you think that would go?
The reality is local councils, once they've had their water assets removed, once the RMA responsibilities have been reset with the regional councils, you know, they're all coming back and saying, and Te Māori Arawhai is the water regulator, is in the mix as well. You know, what is the role of local government? And some of those councils will be saying, well, based off my balance sheets and my financials, I might be better to collaborate or cooperate with the neighbouring council. You know, you can imagine there's some regional councils that I'm thinking of that have other regional councils around them that are both have less than 9,000 people in them. And you could imagine that some of them are thinking about, would we lose anything in local democracy if we were to amalgamate? But that decision should come from the communities locally rather than Wellington centrally dictating that, you know, these councils are going to be smashed together into some sort of consolidated effort. So it does require really good consultation from the communities. And the question with those large entities is then how do you make sure you get that local feel about why that reserve in my local suburb is being, you know, sold off, or why it's being, you know, developed in a different, or, you know, why the roads aren't being developed, or why there's a missing footpath, you know, in this place within that area. So you just got to find that balance of not hopelessly local and mindlessly global, but sort of walking somewhere in the middle of that continuum.
We're speaking specifically about Three Waters reform. Another sort of huge issue in Auckland, I'd say, is transport. I've spoken to you a lot about cycleways, that sort of thing. And you have criticised the government recently for their proposals around cycleways. How do you think the government should be working with Auckland specifically to fix transport, essentially?
Well, I think there's other ways you can do it. Other parts of the world, they do what they call city deals or special economic zones, where essentially central and local government get together, agree a plan, and the council is incented to deliver that plan. They get the money if they deliver. And each city and each region has slightly different challenges. And so you'd have to agree that priority set. You know, personally, you know, if I was in that conversation, I think Auckland needs really high quality public transport right now. And that's the challenge. There's ways in which you can you know, work, get central local government to agree a plan, you know, and Queenstown will be different from Auckland, which will be different from, you know, Waikato or somewhere else. And so, but, and ultimately, you know, you could get down to a level where you talk about other things like social infrastructure, you know, that, you know, how would you deal with homelessness programs? How do you deal with housing, economic development, transport, as we talked about? You know, there's some things that you could say, well, maybe local councils can be really good delivery and execution arms because they know the community better than someone sitting in Wellington in a bureaucracy will. They have a feel for it. they probably can tell you the 50 people that are homeless in their town, and actually with working with community services actually do something about that. So, you know, that's why it's quite exciting, because that's the opportunity, is to sort of reframe it and rethink it.
You just mentioned botany and talking about how you know the specific people in your town. As a local MP, how has that been? How do you find that link? How do you work with local government? And also, do you feel like you're actually doing things? Because I know you've only been in the job for 6 months, so how's it been?
Yeah, I mean, honestly, no, that's probably the most rewarding part of the job. I'm a big extrovert and I really love people. And so actually being out with people in botany and getting a feel for their issues and listening to them and hearing about what's concerning them and what they're worried about is actually the most important job. 2 days a week are typically in the electorate, seeing businesses, visiting with schools, going out with some community organisations, run across these amazing people doing the right things for the right reasons. And they're often unsung heroes, and they care deeply about the community that they're part of. And that's a really, you know, rewarding and satisfying part, is thinking about how do we take all that feedback which they give you, and, you know, if you're out there engaging, you'll get it, and then bring it back to a place like Parliament and think about how we can try and improve things for people. Difficult sometimes when you're in opposition, but there are things that you can do. That's the most exciting thing, because you start to realise it's not just, we can't as New Zealanders leave it in the hands of politicians. All of us as citizens of New Zealand have an opportunity to shape this country and where we're going to go.
Well, I know we've already spoken for a while on local government. I would like to quickly move on to talk a little bit about EVs. So it's been in the news for the past few weeks, really. Could you just quickly tell me what specifically National's issue is with what the government's proposing?
The problem that we've got is that essentially, you know, the government's fee-based scheme, where they essentially give you a credit if you buy an electric vehicle, but a tax if you buy a ute, is flawed, because fundamentally there is no good electric vehicle alternative for those people that have to buy a ute, whether they be a tradie, whether they be a farmer, or a number of other jobs where those vehicles are necessary. And so why would you punish them when there isn't an alternative that they can, you know, participate in or purchase as a result? So
how exactly are they being punished?
Because they're getting taxed. They get taxed very heavily with a tax applied to those when they purchase those vehicles now. And I'm not against EVs. I'm just saying that policy doesn't sort of work. The good thing on EVs is that if you fast forward the progress that we've been made in the last 10 years from not having one to having them in the world to now 15 years down the road, you know, they will be as cheap as existing petrol cars. You know, that's the pathway that it will go down. The market will naturally deliver EVs that are cost competitive and, you know, simple, you know, it's equivalency to petrol cars in 15 years' time. And that's really great, because that is a category of emissions that fundamentally has a technology pathway to help us reduce our emissions over time.
When you say the market will naturally deliver, are you generally optimistic about the market to delivering environmentally friendly solutions?
Yeah, I am. I really am, because having met with all the heads of the different, you know, car manufacturers even 5 or 6 years ago when I was doing that exercise for New Zealand, what was obvious to me is that if you look at the Ford program for Volkswagen, for example, well over half of their future development of cars is in electric. And over time, that's naturally going to happen. These cars are going to get cheaper as they get more mass produced. They're very reliable relative to a petrol car today, but they'll get cheaper and they'll be cleaner. And they'll actually be the thing that the consumer will vote for with their feet in 15 to 20 years' time. By and large, they'll probably be the vast majority of new car purchases, I would imagine.
Well, finally, just going back to the government's policy, other than protecting ute owners, are you pretty happy generally with the government's policy?
No, because I think they're focused at all on a tax. And so, you know, that's the wrong way to go about it.
Well,
the way
do you support giving a bit of a discount to EVs?
Well, I don't think you need to. I think it's naturally happening, to be honest with you. You know, if you want to buy a brand new Tesla at $80,000 or $90,000, you know, I'm not sure that the motivation of a discount's really the motivator. And sometimes what happens, to be honest, is that discount gets put into higher prices. And that's essentially what we've seen happen. So is that the imported car market from Japan has actually gone up. In fact, used cars went up 4.5% last month off the back of this policy, because the dealers and the distributors and the supply chain end up saying, aha, the punter is going to get, you know, $X thousand back as a rebate. Let's just throw that on top of the price and we'll collect that for ourselves, essentially. So prices go up as a result, and that's what's happening. I think the one big thing I would love to have seen was if you could exempt EVs from what we call fringe benefit tax until 2025, that would be a big encouragement for EVs to be picked up in company car fleets. And the reason I say talk about company cars and companies so much and corporates so much is that they buy a third of the new vehicle purchases in New Zealand are actually company fleet purchases. And they typically come into a company, they're used as a company car for 2 years, and then they're on sold. They might have done 20 or 30,000 kilometres, and then they appear in the secondary market. And so you get good modern cars that have been well maintained, secondhand, coming through out of new into the secondhand market.
That was National Party MP Christopher Luxon. You're listening to The Wire on 95 BFM.